Mr. Griffin? I was just kind of spacing there. I'm sorry. Ms. Deaver did raise a point while they're exiting, and before we go on to the next one. Is that something that we can put on a future agenda to discuss the timing of our hearing versus planning and zoning's recommendations?
Well, Mr. Lank, maybe you could participate in this conversation about whether the council should hold hearings until after the recommendation of the commission.
It's getting late. I guess I don't really want to get into the depths of it, but is it something that we could put on the...
We could discuss it, but they have 45 days, and sometimes when they're advertised sequentially with both hearings set up in advance, and when they don't make a decision at the first level, it will often come after our hearing here.
For example, this week, it's a day later. The commission may make a recommendation tomorrow. They may make a recommendation next week because they're trying to stay within the 45 days.
Okay, this is a discussion I think we need to have maybe in the future, maybe 3 weeks when we get some of these other more important items behind us.
Yeah, I've had questions from constituents about this.
Mr. Griffin, can we continue?
Okay. The CZ 1623 and 1624.
I would note that at the Planning and Zoning Commission level, Jim Fuqua, on behalf of the applicants for change of zone 1623 and 1624, did request that they be able to combine and consolidate the application into one as far as presentation, and if so approved by council to proceed in that manner, they will give presentation on both applications at once. But you would have to vote when you do vote separately on each application because they are two different applications.
And there would be separate... they're both CZs, so there wouldn't be any conditions, but they would have to have separate findings.
Separate findings, right.
Is that acceptable to the council?
Do we need a motion on that, or is that something we can do
typically
by consensus?
Typically, we have not in the past.
Typically, it's just a consensus if there's no argument.
If there is no objection, we'd like to combine the two applications.
Well, what are the ramifications of combining these?
Shorten presentation.
Just shorten presentation. I'm all for that, but but I don't want to miss important facts and commingling things like that. I'm not sure I don't know if it's a good idea or not.
If I can just speak for a second, what I'll do is I'll present everything in the first application, and then I'll merely say on our second application, everything I just said applies to that too. So there won't be a second presentation.
Really.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lang. Continue.
For the benefit of the council and the public, this is change of zone 1623, the application of W&J Jones Family LP to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a CR1 commercial residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth Hundred, Sussex County, for land lying northeast of Kings Highway, also known as Route 268, and across from Dartmouth Drive, to be located on 1.96 acres, more or less. The second application is change of zone 1624. It's the application of W&J Jones Family LP to amend the comprehensive zoning map from an AR1 agriculture residential district to a MRRPC medium density residential district, residential planned community, for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Lewis and Rehoboth Hundred, Sussex County, for land lying 181.48 feet northeast of Kings Highway, also referred to as Route 268, and across from Dartmouth Drive, and to be located on 44.49 acres, more or less. For the benefit of the council, I pass down these small binders.
Oh, heavens. You expect me to carry those down?
Better do one at a time. I thought George was still there. These are the exhibit booklets. There's just five copies. That were provided by the applicants prior to the commission's public hearing. My report, again, the report does contain the information, references to what's in that booklet. We heard comments from the County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division on both applications. We heard comments from the Sussex Conservation District on both applications. We heard comments from DLDOT on the combined applications. We also have received copies of the Office of State Planning Coordination comments in reference to the PLUS review. There were two letters received, one from Seascape Property Management on behalf of Fairway Village, I'm making reference to opposition to the application on September 5 of 2006, when the application was first being proposed, and a letter received December 1st of 2008 referencing that the owners within Fairway Village do not directly oppose the project, but do strenuously oppose any access to the community of Fairway Village, with additional comments which are a part of the record in my report. The Mr. Walt Jones was present with some family members, and Jim Fuqua, attorney, Gary Couples, professional engineer with ECI Environmental Consultants International, Guy DiMartino, traffic engineer from Traffic Planning and Design, all giving testimony. Again, it's in excess of a page in my report. Mr. Fuqua did submit findings of facts for the CR1 zoning and findings of fact and suggested conditions of approval for the MRRPC zoning applications. There were no parties present in support of the application. Commission did find that Betsy Farlow, Mike Tyler, Barbara Vaughn, and John Mateko were present in opposition and expressed concerns about public notice, the lack of time to respond, possible burial sites and archaeological sites on the property, safety concerns due to traffic for pedestrians, cyclists, and emergency personnel and patients going to and from BB Medical Facility, reference and rights of way needs to be greater, concerns about curvature on each end of the entrance proposed, et cetera, again, a part of my report. Mr. Tyler did present written comments, which to be made a part of the record. At the conclusion of the public hearing, the commission discussed the application, and in both cases, the commission did defer action for further consideration, both on changes of zone 1623 and 1624. And that's all I have, unless you have questions.
Hearing no questions, Mr. Fuqua.
Mr. President, Mrs. Deaver, gentlemen, good evening. For the record, my name is Jim Fuqua. I'm an attorney here in Georgetown, and I'm representing the Jones family, who's the applicant on this application. The Jones family is seated right back in that row right behind these two ladies here. Just an introductory comment I want to make, really nothing to do with this application. I realize that this is a new experience for the new council members in terms of sitting here, hearing zoning applications, determining the facts, making a decision. But I'd also let you know that it's also a new experience for us who present these. And we've dealt with a certain council for a long period of time. We understood their what they preferred, what their thoughts were, what their feelings were about things. So it's going to be a learning experience, certainly for the attorneys who present these, as well as any applicants over the next couple of months, in learning what people are interested in and how they like things presented. I will say it's my position that our responsibility in presenting an application is to present the facts to you and to show that our application complies with the land use regulations that are applicable to that application. If we don't explain enough, ask us questions. If we tell you things you already know, please excuse us. Again, as I said, it's a learning process. As I stated, I am representing the W. and J. Jones family. That is Walt and his children, Barbara, Paul, and Rick, who are, again, seated behind me. Also with me tonight is Gary Couples of ECI. That is the engineering firm and site design firm on this application. And Guy DiMartino, who's with Traffic Planning and Design, Inc., who are the traffic engineers. As we mentioned, there's actually two applications before you tonight. One application is for a CR1 commercial rezoning, and that's for a parcel of land approximately 2 acres in size. The second application is for an MRRPC rezoning for 144 residential units, to be known as Hunter's Walk, and that would be located on the remainder of the Jones's land. Again, just as we explained, the applications are interconnected, so to avoid any repetition, I'm going to address them both in this application, and then I won't be presenting anything on a second application. A revised site plan and the exhibit book, which I think you now have, was submitted for the record. Obviously, there's a lot of information contained in this book. Planning and zoning has not made a recommendation yet, so you won't be deciding this tonight either, so you'll have time to refer to this. What we try to do is submit a lot of the information so we don't have to be repetitive and repeat it all tonight. So there's a lot of information in there that I'll be referring to. The land comprising this application, oh, and by the way, the exhibit that's up here, which I know you can't see from where you're sitting, it's in Appendix E, I believe, of that book. So if you want, for reference, to see that site plan. The parcel of land is basically, at the current time, in three separate tax map parcels. This is one parcel, which I'll refer to as the driving range parcel, the golf course parcel, and then there's a strip of land along there, which is the third parcel, which is really part of the golf course parcel. The entire parcel has been utilized as the Midway Par 3 golf course and driving range for many years. If you're familiar with the site, it's located just off of the north side of Route 1 and the east side of Kings Highway, just outside of Lewis. The first parcel, tax map parcel, again, which is the driving range parcel, 2.3 acres of that parcel has been subdivided, and that is the actual parcel that we are seeking the COR1 rezoning for. So there's already a lot that's been created, and that is recorded. That total parcel contains 26.29 acres. The golf course parcel contains 17.8 acres. It is the location of the Par 3 golf course. There's also a small office building, which is used for the management of the golf course and storage. And then the strip parcel that I mentioned is about 2.5 acres, and that was purchased in 2000 at a sheriff's sale. It was unknown owners, and I believe it was purchased as a tax sale. The driving range parcel had been leased by Mr. Jones for a number of years, and he actually purchased that back in 1999. And the golf course parcel, Mr. Jones and his wife purchased back in 1981, which is when he started the Midway Par 3 golf course, and he and his family have operated it since then. Again, the two applications, the CR rezoning is for the approximate 2-acre parcel, which fronts on the east side of Kings Highway. What's being proposed on that site, and again, that would be this area right here. What's being proposed on that site is a 12,000-square-foot office building. Based on comments which were received during the PLUS process, and again, I know you're familiar with the PLUS process, but not every, but many applications are required to go through the PLUS process, which is going to a hearing in Dover before the different state of Delaware agencies and receiving comments from them. And that's done before your application to basically receive advice and recommendations based on the state agencies. And based on comments that were received during the PLUS process, the parking layout for the office building was modified so that all parking was relocated to the sides and the rear of that building. There'll be a total of 49 parking spaces. That includes 5 handicap spaces. No parking would be located in the front of the building. In the front of the building, which again would be the area along Kings Highway, there would be an improvement of a 10-foot wide multi-use path, which would be along Kings Highway. Next to that would be a 15-foot wide landscaped area, which would be located between the multi-use path and the actual building and driveway on the site. So there would be landscaping along the front of the property along Kings Highway, and of course those types of things are really dealt with at the site plan level. There'll be one entrance to the office building from Kings Highway that will also serve as the entrance for the Hunter's Walk residential development. So that's going to be basically a combined entrance for both the commercial and the residential development. The CR commercial rezoning, we believe, is appropriate and consistent with the nature of the area and really constitutes an infill commercial zoning of this property. I'm just going to hold up a tax map here if you can see this. The pink site here is actually our site. This whole strip here is a strip along Route 1, which is a 600-foot commercial strip that runs along there. Our parcel is actually kind of bookended by commercial property. So the property to our east and the west of our site is already zoned C1 commercial. So as I said, this is filling in commercial between two existing commercial properties, as well as, again, the lands directly across Kings Highway from the site, again, are also all developed commercially. So we believe this would just be appropriate. Again, across the street is an office and business complex, be similar to the uses that we're proposing here, which is an office building. And the general nature of this immediate area along this part of Kings Highway is general office use. It includes banks, there's medical offices, there's a funeral home, there's a bakery, and similar type of business uses. The second application is for 144-unit residential MR, which is medium-density RPC, residential planned community, and that would be on the remaining 44.33 acres. And that would be the remainder of the driving range parcel, all of the golf course parcel, and the strip parcel. The original plan, again, this application was filed actually in May of 2007. It went to plus, actually, I believe, in early 2007. So it's been in the process, for several years. When it was originally filed back in May of 2007, it was a different application that was filed. The original application was for 178 residential units in 11 multifamily buildings. And those buildings were... and this is the original site plan. Those buildings were located both on the driving range parcel and then also on the golf course parcel. There were actually two entrances shown on the original application. There was the entrance here off of Kings Highway, and then this entrance here comes in off of Route 1 through Fairway Village, which is this development here. This is the existing entrance that comes into the golf course now, and that would be interconnected with this. So again, there'd be really be connection between Route 1 and Kings Highway. That was the original application. Based on, again, comments that were received during the PLUS process and after further consideration of the design of this development, it was determined that the site plan could be redesigned to create what we believe is a superior utilization of the site and the resources that exist there. And the revised site plan, which is the plan there and the plan in your Exhibit E, is what we're presenting to you tonight and what was presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission. The changes that were made to that plan were basically the following. The residential area was clustered onto the driving range parcel. So again, the units that were located on the golf course parcel were all removed, and all the residential use was clustered in this area here. The number of units were reduced from the original proposed 178 to 144 units. The 144 units are contained in 9 buildings. The gross density of the RPC is 3.2 units per acre. By clustering the residential development on the driving range parcel, the existing par 3 golf course will be preserved, and it will serve as an open vista of space and a recreational amenity for the residents of this community as well as the general public. So with these revisions, basically this par 3 golf course will be preserved and will remain operational. The commercial piece and the residential development will only use the entrance from Kings Highway. The golf course entrance from Route 1 will continue to be open, that will only be used for the golf course, which is what it's used for today. There'll be no interconnection between the golf course and the residential development. So basically the Route 1 access will not be an entrance or an exit for any of the new requested development, the residential or the commercial. And I'll mention that Lawrence did say there was a letter from Fairway Village regarding this. Their concern was that there would be a throughway coming through there. And I did call the property manager and explained to him that with this revised plan, there would be no access. And I believe that that did satisfy them. Now, because of the location, as far as amenities for the proposed residential use, obviously the units will have easy access to the par 3 golf course and the putting green. The development will also have recreational amenities that are located in this area right up here. And those amenities will include a tennis court. There'll also be a multi-use court, which again is a court that can be used as a basketball court or a tennis court, depending on how it's set up. There'll be a swimming pool, and there'll be a community center. Within the residential development, sidewalks would be located on both sides of the interior streets. Street lighting would be provided along the streets. The streets would be private, built to the county engineer design requirements. Stormwater would be directed to a central stormwater pond, which is located to the rear of the driving range parcel. Again, which you can see obviously on the plan where the stormwater pond would be located. The design and improvements of the stormwater facility would meet or exceed the requirements of the soil conservation regulations, and best management practices would be utilized in connection with that. There is a bus stop provided near the development entrance. That location would be subject to school district approval for school buses. To the rear of the area where the stormwater pond is, and that's back in this area here, and I know you can't really see this here, but there is lines drawn on here that is showing some areas that are comprised of 7.4 acres of federal jurisdictional wetlands. Again, it's located on the rear of the driving range parcel. There'll be no encroachment or disturbance of the wetland area at all. And we've established, which is shown on the site plan, a minimum 50-foot buffer, which is adjacent to the wetland boundary, which will remain undisturbed. I do want to state that 50-foot buffer is the minimum. In most places, the area between any disturbance and the wetlands are far in excess of the 50 feet. In many areas, that distance is 100 to 120 feet. This is significant because under the existing regulations, the only requirement for buffers from wetlands are buffers from tidal wetlands. 50-foot buffer from tidal wetlands. There is no existing requirement for any buffers from federal wetlands. Again, we are proposing and basically designing this to provide that minimum 50-foot buffer. And as I said, actually, it's in far in excess of that in most places. With the redesign of the site, the woodlands on the site, for the most part, will be extensively preserved. Over 84% of the existing woodlands located on the site will remain as they are today. The total acreage of the RPC site is 44.3 acres. The total open space, and again, the county, I don't know whether you've passed the open space ordinance yet or not, but the county was defining what open space is, but at the time this was filed, it was still open space was open space. The total open space on this site, and you know, being honest with you, that's comprised of the wetland areas, the buffers, the woodlands, the grass areas around the buildings, the recreational complex, the par 3 golf course. All of that contains about 37.5 acres, which is about 84% of the site. So 84% of this site will remain in some form of open space or recreational area. And again, I want to stress, because I know originally there was an article in the paper saying that the golf course was going away. With this redesign, and one of the reasons for this redesign, was to maintain and preserve this golf course as an operating golf course. In addition, if, and certainly anything in the future can happen, if this golf course ever ceases to operate, that land that is the golf course will remain as open space. Permanently, it will be preserved that way.
An easement, I mean, a deeded restriction or something, make sure that in the future some council would understand that that's going to be, you know, left open space forever, because as golf courses maybe fail or aren't productive.
Well, again, the way we're designing this, that is to remain as open space, either as a functional golf course or as open space.
Is it on its own separate parcel, or is it?
No, the whole 44 acres is part of this. Okay. And we're representing that that's part of the open space, and that land is being utilized in terms of density. We're basically clustering the density onto the driving range parcel. We wouldn't be justified in seeking.
Well, the engineering department says no additional capacity will be available to redevelop the golf course.
Well, that's based on the existing EDU allocations, right? But what I just want to make clear that we're permanently preserving that as open space. It's intended to remain a functional golf course, but if it ceases to be a functional golf course, it would be open space.
How is that done legally?
A condition, I guess, could be put.
Well, again, in approving the RPC, you'll be approving a site plan that would show that. Quite frankly, you'd put a condition on us saying that will remain as open space.
And what's the ownership?
The owner, it would be part of the overall condominium association that would own it.
They would own it?
But it would be subject to a long-term lease that would be leased to the Jones family.
And they would know when they buy a home there that they have to... Who maintains it?
The golf course?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the golf course would be maintained by the Jones family.
By the leasee. The
right, whoever okay. The golf course operator is.
Okay, all right.
And again, that would have to, the details of that and the legality of that would have to be worked out, but right. That's the business plan. Again, as I mentioned, this application's actually been in the process for about 3 years. During that period of time and in preparing this application, there were a number of studies that were done and utilized in designing this. Most of that information is contained in this exhibit book that we've submitted to you. I'll just summarize to you. There was a traffic impact study that was prepared by Traffic Planning and Design, Inc. There was a wetland delineation report that was prepared by Ed Linnae of Environmental Resources, Inc., and that basically is what determines the wetland areas. That report has been submitted to the Army Corps of Engineers for final determination. There was a cultural resource assessment, which was done by Dr. Edward Otter. A cultural resource assessment is basically an archaeological study. It's a preliminary study where they go out and look at the resources to determine the history of the site and visually inspect the site for any types of historical structures or cemeteries, things of that nature. Again, information is in the plan for that. There was a phase one environmental assessment report that was prepared by ECI. That report looks at the site to determine if there's any environmental features that would be a hindrance to the development.
Was there any?
No. Yeah. We prepared what's called an environmental assessment and public facilities evaluation report. And technically, this land is located in the environmentally sensitive development area, which is a designation under the Sussex County Land Use Plan. And several years ago, the council enacted a environmentally sensitive development ordinance, and that created what's called an overlay zone. And under that overlay zone, if you file an application that's in the environmentally sensitive development area, you are to submit this report. So this is submitted, it's in the record, and I just want to make that clear for the record. We also made inquiries to the U.S. Department of the Interior and to the Delaware Division of Fish and Wildlife, confirming that there were no endangered or threatened species located on the site. And we also prepared, and again, pardon me for trying to explain these, but I don't know if you're familiar with some of these terms. We also prepared what's called a Section 99.9C report. Now, just to confuse you even more, that's not even required. That's actually required under the subdivision ordinance if you're doing a subdivision. But this report itself, this 99C, it lists about 13 or 14 aspects of development, and you're supposed to summarize what you're doing about those. And I just find that very helpful and a very concise summary of many aspects of any kind of development, whether it's a subdivision or not. So again, we prepared that, and a copy of that is in the appendix. All those documents I just mentioned are in the appendix. Now, as to public utilities for, again, both the commercial and the residential development, water service for both domestic use and fire protection will be provided by a public water utility company. Actually, both Tidewater Utilities and Artesian are willing to provide service to this area, and that's something they have to work out between themselves as to who has the service area there, but we have an abundance of water providers. Electric will be provided by Delmarva Power, telephone by Verizon, cable by Comcast. Sewer service will be by Sussex County. This site is located in the West Rehoboth expansion of the Dewey Beach Sanitary Sewer District. So we are in the sewer district. From our review of the county, the county has a sewer planning study which was prepared by engineers that were retained by the county that plan out the sewer districts. From our review of that planning study, the county assigned approximately 159 EDUs to these parcels that we have before you tonight. Our proposed development will utilize 144 EDUs for the residential units, 3 EDUs for the commercial development, and 2 EDUs for the community center, or a total of 149 EDUs. The 149 EDUs that we're proposing are, again, less than what was assigned to this property by the county engineering office. So we think that it's pretty clear that this is within the boundaries of what the county anticipated this property to be used for. There's a summary review that the county engineer gives out on every zoning application that will come before you, where basically they make comments about the availability of sewer. On this application for the 144 units, they state that the sewer system designation assumption, that's how much the county assumed would be developed, was four units per acre. As I said, we're actually doing 3.2 units per acre. And then the comments that were made by the county engineer is that the proposed project is within the planning study assumptions for sewer service and sewer capacity is adequate as long as the 20.3 acre of open space is included in the project. And as we discussed earlier, the golf course is included in the project. So again, the proposed sewer usage is basically what the county engineer planned for this site. The development is in the Cape Henlopen School District. It's within the service area of the Lewis Fire Department. You're all basically familiar with the area. Shopping is available on Route 1 and in Lewis. There's more shopping available than you could ever utilize down in that area. Medical offices are located in Lewis. And, of course, the BB Hospital, which is our regional hospital, is located in Lewis. Again, as part of the planning process for the development, a traffic impact study was prepared by Traffic Planning and Design, Inc. Guy is here if you have any questions about that. I'm not going to call Guy unless you have questions. When the TIS is done, basically there's a meeting with DLDOT. They lay out the parameters of what they want studied. The traffic engineers go out and then do that study. They prepare a preliminary report. They submit to DLDOT. DLDOT reviews that. If DLDOT approves that, they tell them to go ahead and prepare a final report. A final report is prepared, submitted to DLDOT. DLDOT reviews that, concurs in it, changes it, makes what recommendations they want to. Basically, what DLDOT determined is that the developer, my clients, would be responsible for participating in road improvements that will be required by DLDOT, and those improvements are set forth in DLDOT's revised traffic impact study review letter, which is dated October 29, 2008. That is located in Section J of the exhibit book. I'll just summarize that, that what DelDOT's requiring is improvements to King's Highway and Carpenter's Way, which is basically at the site entrance. Improvements are funding an equitable portion of improvements at King's Highway and Dartmouth Drive, which is the road or the road down King's Highway a little further. Funding an equitable portion of the improvements to Route 1 and Dartmouth Drive at Route 1, and doing bicycle and pedestrian improvements on King's Highway. When I say participate, DelDOT from plan projects that are on the table combine different developers and say you're going to have a percentage interest in doing these improvements. Several weeks ago, the council approved a development further down on Gills Neck Road, I guess it's on Gills Neck Road, which would also be contributing to a larger share of these improvements. But when DelDOT reviews a traffic impact study, they don't do it in a vacuum. They do it in light of other developments that are proposed in the area. The requirements at DelDOT, I believe, we're requiring here also envision the possibility of a commercial development, which was also proposed, which at least for the time being has been withdrawn, and that is not on the board at this time. The main point is DelDOT reviewed this. DelDOT determined what improvements were required. We're required to participate in those improvements. In addition to the actual road improvements, DelDOT reviewed and approved a combined commercial residential entrance that I referred to, which is shown on the site plan, and that provides the entrance from King's Highway. DelDOT issued a letter of no objection back in May 2008. That is in Section J of the exhibit book. There was a revised letter of no objection dated December 11, 2008, and that was submitted for the record, so that is in the record. Without going into a lot of history, what we attempted to do in the beginning was to work out a cross-easement agreement with this adjacent property owner that would basically provide an entrance for the property next to us as well as us. We were not able to work that out. That property subsequently was put up for sale. We tried to purchase that property. We couldn't arrive at an agreeable price, so we proceeded with designing our own entrance, and which is what's shown on the plan before you. And that entrance, DelDOT has approved and issued a letter of no objection. We will continue to work with the adjacent property owner and try to work out an agreement for a combined entrance. But we can't take someone's property or force someone to give us, nor can anyone take our property or force us to give them something. But again, if reasonable minds can get together, hopefully we will get that worked out. My point being, there will be one entrance there, and that will be per DelDOT's approval.
Could I ask you a question?
Sure.
I hate to drag this out, but you talked about DelDOT's proposals, and they talked about the other developments in the area that would contribute to this overall contribution to the cost of some new roads, possibly. You said there was a commercial development that is no longer on the going to happen. What commercial development was that?
Part of the senators, the Townsend application.
Uh-huh.
I mean, as I understood it, this is just, I was here from what I saw. They withdrew.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, I believe that was withdrawn, as I understood it.
It was.
As I mentioned, going back through the application history, the original application was reviewed by PLUS, again, which is the State Planning Office, back in August of 2006. After you meet with PLUS, they review it all, and then they issue a letter, which, again, is in the exhibit book. The PLUS letter, which was issued from the Office of State Planning, is dated August 28, 2006. It states that the Office of State Planning Coordination had no objection to the development, and the PLUS letter noted that the development was located in levels 2 and 3 of the strategies for state policies, and it complemented the design of this development, which avoided most of the wooded area. The state strategies plan is technically a plan for where the state's going to spend money, 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 being areas where they really don't intend to spend money, 1 being areas where they're concentrating money, 2 and 3 being areas where money will be spent. So we're in areas where the state recognized that the development would occur, and that's why they had no objection to this. A response, we as an applicant are required to send a response to the PLUS response. And that PLUS response letter was sent. It was provided by Mr. Couples, and he advised PLUS that our design actually had been modified from the original design that PLUS had seen. And Mr. Couples additionally met with some people in the state planning office to discuss those changes before we made them. As a result of that, the State Planning Coordination Office issued a subsequent letter, and that's dated March 21st, 2007, and again, that is in the exhibit book, that, again, PLUS had no objection to the changes, that's what you're seeing tonight, that the project did not require any further review by PLUS, and that and that the PLUS office, the reason I want to quote this is because I don't get a letter like this too often. The PLUS office, quote, finds this to be a positive step in the creation of a quality development that is in step with the efforts of the state and county to improve the quality of life for Delaware residents. So basically, they were complimenting on the redesign of this, preserving the golf course, concentrating the development, buffering the wetlands, and preserving the trees. And again, all of that PLUS information is located in, or the PLUS correspondence is in the exhibit book. Now, they're basically a general summary of the facts of the case, supplemented by all this stuff right here. Now, those facts are those facts, but how do they apply to what are the land use regulations? Now, as to compliance with those regulations, as I already stated, the land is designated as level 2 and 3 under the state strategist report. Their requested uses are compatible with the uses recognized by the state as appropriate. PLUS had no objection to this, and basically this application is consistent with the state strategies plan. The proposed commercial and MRRPC applications, in our opinion, are consistent with the purposes of those designations as they're stated in the zoning ordinance, and they're in character with the adjacent and surrounding zoning uses. I showed you that the zoning map, which basically shows this 600-foot strip of commercial going up here, and the commercial properties on either side of us. So as far as our commercial application, we have a piece that is basically a little island surrounded by commercial on either side, and commercial across from it, and what we're proposing is basically exactly the same and consistent with what already exists. The residential portion of our application, including the multifamily use, is basically what already exists adjacent to our parcel. Again, from Route 1, coming in that golf course entrance, if you're familiar with Route 1, this is Fairway Village. I believe it's 9 multifamily buildings. I don't know what the density is. It's zoned commercial. I assume the density is probably in the neighborhood of 12 to the acre. But that's a multifamily development right there. And adjacent to the golf course right over here is Bay Crossing. Bay Crossing is a parcel. It's about 106 acres in size. It actually was rezoned back in June of 2000. It was an MRRPC application, exactly the same type of application as we're requesting tonight. It was originally filed as Blenheim Homes was the application. It's now significantly built out. It was approved for 256 residential units, including townhouse units. It's a very attractive development. Basically, with the redesign of our application, what we're going to be doing by keeping the golf course is creating this large area of open space and open vista between our development and between this development there. So there's no impingement of either residential development on the other. It's a recreational amenity and open space that basically would be complementary to both of those developments. So we feel that both the commercial and the MRRPC zoning are consistent with the character and the nature of the area, the uses in the area, and basically consistent with decisions that the county's made on past applications. Lastly, aside from the state strategies and the zoning ordinance, applications have to be in accordance with the land use plan. Now, this application is actually viewed subject to the 2003 land use plan. Now, as you know, the county adopted a 2007 land use plan earlier this year, or I guess last year now. But again, this application was filed some time ago, and under state law, it is actually subject to the existing plan at the time it was filed. As I mentioned, this is in the environmentally sensitive developing area. Mm-hmm. Under the plan, that is what's referred to as a designated growth area. Mm-hmm. The plan states that additional commercial uses will be needed in the environmentally sensitive development area for neighborhood shopping and businesses to serve the increasing population. So the commercial, based on what's there, as well as the plan, we believe is consistent. The plan specifically recognizes that housing types approved in the environmentally sensitive development area include multifamily type developments, apartments, condominiums, and townhouses. The plan states that residential planned communities and village style development should be encouraged in the environmentally sensitive area to provide open space and to protect habitat, which we believe is what we have done. And I think the site plan supports that. The land use plan also recognizes that any increase in density in the environmentally sensitive area should provide proper environmental safeguards. And again, I would submit to you that's exactly what we do. We preserve the woodlands, we do not encroach in the wetlands, and we create, again, buffers that are not required by ordinance, but certainly are beneficial. In addition to that, under the section of the land use plan, which is the recreation and open space section, we think this implements the goals of the plan. We provide extensive open space, active and passive recreational facilities, and again, the major factor, by preserving the golf course, we're providing recreational opportunities for all county residents, all visitors, as well as the people that are going to be living in this community. I'd go on to say that with the new land use plan, it's not as if the new land use plan would change anything I just said. The new land use plan, even though it's not the one applicable to us, again supports this. Under the new land use plan, this site is in a growth area. This proposal will expand housing opportunities near job centers. Job centers are the town of Lewis, Rehoboth, and the whole Route 1 corridor. This preserves usable open space, which is, again, a goal of the plan. This is located where central water and sewer facilities are available, and again, well within the parameters of what's designed. And again, the 2007 plan recognizes that multifamily units and office use is appropriate in the environmentally sensitive development area. So we're in accordance with both the 2003 and 2007 plan. The intention of the development in terms of how it would proceed, it's intended that the development would occur in phases. The commercial site would be the first phase. The residential buildings would then proceed in a manner to basically permit the driving range to remain open as long as possible. That was something I insisted upon because I go up there and hit golf balls. So the buildings would come along those lines. Each phase would be one building, and again, it would be kind of based on market demand, certainly. In terms of marketing, the thought right now, and I don't want to say this is exactly what will happen, but the thought is that while this would not be an age-restricted development, it is the intention that it would be designed and marketed as an active adult community. Mm-hmm. I have prepared some conditions for the MRRPC. On a RPC, you can place conditions on it similar to what you were talking about on some of the earlier applications tonight. On both the RPC and the commercial application, I have prepared some proposed findings of fact. Again, as you discussed earlier, when you make a decision, it's your responsibility to state findings of facts, reasons for that decision. I submit this to you for your consideration. You can use them, you can throw them away, you can modify them, but I think sometimes you may find them helpful, and I'll hand that out to Mr. Griffin if you would pass those down. Kind of in summary, just to briefly touch on everything, the two applications are in accordance with the language and the goals of the state strategies plan and the Sussex County land use plan. The commercial parcel we're requesting is consistent with what basically exists on either side of it and the uses that basically surround it. The MRRPC creates what we strongly believe is a very superior living environment by clustering the residential use, preserving the golf course, protecting the environmental features on the site. And again, it's the same type of use that exists on both the front and the side of the property. The developer will contribute its fair share of public facility improvements in accordance with DLDOT's determination. This isn't what we decide. This is what DLDOT tells us we have to do. The site will be served by public water and county sewer. It conforms to what the county engineer office planned this development density to be. Plus, indicated no objection. They complimented the site. And kind of in conclusion, Walt Jones and his wife, they've owned the majority of this property since 1981. Over those 27 years, they and their family have physically worked this site. They're not farmers, but they work like farmers out there. They're cutting grass, watering it, doing all the work out there. A golf course is a heavy maintenance type of operation. During that period of time, they have seen the entire area around them develop. Again, in your book, there's an aerial map showing the area. And again, I know you're familiar with it. I'm going to hand these out anyway. This is just from the tax map, but that's where their parcel is, and you can see what's developed around there. And again, I'm not beating a dead horse. You're familiar with the Route 1 area. What's occurred around them is development, and what they're requesting now is to create what we believe is a quality, environmentally sound development that's consistent with the nature of the area. And what we believe will be a benefit to not only the residents there, but as well as the public through the preservation of the golf course. And basically, that would conclude our presentation with just a couple more comments.
Quick, that horse is about to die.
Told you.
Just a couple more comments. The way the system works, we're the applicant, we make our presentation. Opponents then have an opportunity to speak, and unlike courts where then we would get another chance to speak and rebuttal, here we don't. So normally you can't rebut something until you hear it, but of course, as you know, we've been the planning and zoning, and so we've had some insight into what comments were made in opposition to the application, and I just want to mention how I would respond to some of those comments when you do hear them. And several people spoke, and I'm not going to go into detail about all the comments, and I certainly don't mean to imply that the comments are not worthy of your consideration or unsupportable. I don't agree with the majority of the comments, but that's ultimately for you to decide. And I'll just refer to Mr. Tyler submitted a written statement on behalf of the Citizens Coalition, and I think that kind of summarizes the general statements in opposition that were made. And again, I would just say, one of the comments was about traffic. And we all know that in the beach areas, traffic's always a concern. But again, what we've done is a traffic impact study at DLDOT's direction, and we're going to be required to do traffic site improvements per DLDOT. Now, that's basically all we can do. This is 144 units. short of saying there'll never be any more development, you know, that's all you could do. And, you know, it's not what our land use plan states. It's not what the county wants. So we're basically bearing our responsibility for our share of the improvements that Del Duck determines will basically take care of this additional development. The Citizens Coalition letter, it states that this, something I always like to point out, it states this site is in the environmentally sensitive district. Okay, well, there is no environmentally sensitive district. It's the environmentally sensitive developing area, and it is a growth district under our comprehensive plan. So whenever you hear environmentally sensitive, you also have to hear developing area, because that's what it is. This is where the county said development's going to occur. It just happens to be in an area that does need environmental protection, as we've done on this site. There's some comments about stormwater management, really that the Citizens Coalition does not want stormwater ponds. Basically, we have to go to soil conservation and have this approved. They're the ones that make the rules and regulations. That's what we have to comply with. If Citizens Coalition disagrees with those rules and regulations, you know, that's their opinion, but we just have to comply with what the law is. The buffers, I think I've already addressed. Again, there is no requirement for buffers. We're providing very adequate buffers. And I guess the last point is that the Citizens Coalition basically are saying our density should be reduced, that there should be no increase in density. There should be a low minimum density. Now, the problem with that is that position ignores the goals of our plan. What our land use plan says, and the way it was designed, was that you were going to have higher densities around municipalities, around town centers, and then you were going to have, again, higher densities in areas adjacent to that. And then as you move out into the rural areas and the agricultural areas, you're going to have low density. I mean, that's the way the plan's designed. Higher density is supposed to occur in these areas. So reducing density, that's inconsistent with the land use plan. And the way I can show that is the county engineer's office says 4 units per acre, 4 EDUs per acre. That's what they plan for this site. All right, we're doing 3.2. We're doing less than the county engineer really planned on. So my position would be the Citizens Coalition's position is really inconsistent with the land use plan. Our plan is in accordance with the land use plan. So with that as my pre-rebuttal, that will conclude my formal presentation. And again, we'll be happy to try to answer any questions you have, as again, we have our engineer and our traffic engineer, so hopefully you won't have to hear me anymore.
Thank you, Mr. Fuqua. Ms. Deaver, have you any questions?
Yes. Mr. Lank, under the commercial part of it, CR1, what can be put there? What kinds of things?
What kind of use?
Yeah, examples.
Any general commercial office type use. The one thing that was struck in the CR1 from the original C1 is the multifamily use, unless they apply for conditional.
Yeah, but I mean, what kinds of businesses? All kinds. I was reading CR1. All kinds of businesses.
There's a couple pages of uses.
Yeah,
that would
all
be
kinds
allowed.
Of businesses.
Offices, retail.
So, are we limiting this to a certain kind?
Anything listed in the B1 district, also. So
we still have B1.
B1 is allowed in the C1 and in the CR1.
But we still have B1. So why didn't you apply for B1?
Because, Mrs. Deaver, the uses that you're talking about right now today, they can be located right there, and right there, on both sides of us and across the street from us.
I'm talking about your application. Why
we want to be consistent. Well, we want to be consistent with what's next to us.
What kind of building are you? What kind of business are you going to have there?
An office building.
And B1 would have been an office building.
Could have been.
Right? But you went for CR1, which could be a lot. If we approve CR1, wouldn't it open up to a whole lot of different uses that this particular gentleman didn't have in mind, you know, that could happen later? I don't know.
No, I understand your point, but our point was since it's zone commercial on either side of us and across the street, we were being consistent with the nature of the area.
The difference typically has been mobile home sales, boat sales, car sales.
You could have used car sales. You could have car lots. And what?
They're the four big things.
Four big things.
Mm-hmm. They're the four big ones that we saw different from B1 to C1.
Mm-hmm. Okay, okay.
And some other
So there could be used car, there could be car sales there, I guess, but you don't have well, how big is it? It's 2 acres. Oh, I guess you could. You could sell cars there. Yeah.
Anything else, Ms. Deaver?
Yes. I didn't see how many parking places each one of these units would have.
Each one of the residential units?
Mm-hmm.
I believe they're required to have 2 now.
They have
Gary,
2?
Is it 2? Yeah.
They have 2.
2.
Did I read that one of them is going to have underground parking?
Gary, could you identify yourself and explain that?
Yes, my name is Gary Couples. I'm a registered professional land surveyor, professional planner,
right.
President of Engineering Consultants International, Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. Yes, one of those units does have underground parking, and oftentimes there are people that want that inside type of garage atmosphere, and that is correct, we do. And we've looked at the groundwater in that area, and we can provide that in that location.
Nice and dry?
It's not, well, absolutely,
uh-huh.
It is, truly.
Yeah, I live in that area, too.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Okay, and how many homes could you get, how many units could you get, how could you build under the kind of zoning that it has right now, AR1? How many units could you put in there?
The zoning permits 2 units to the acre.
2 to acre. And then there would be some deductions from that, or?
It would be site design restrictions in terms of stormwater, streets, things of that
what,
nature.
What, 70, 80, 90, what are we talking, how many units?
Well, if it's 44 acres.
44
well,
acres.
Right, but if you looked at subdividing it into conventional lots,
right.
The golf course wouldn't exist, so you'd subdivide the golf course in, because what we're doing is taking the density from the golf course and moving it over.
Well, but you're not giving the people the use of the golf course.
No,
are you?
I don't think you're quite understanding. You're
oh,
asking
I understand.
Me if on the total tract,
mm-hmm.
How many units? Well, the total tract is 44 point
but
some
we
acres.
But are we looking at the tract that's being developed?
No, no, ma'am, we're not. We're looking at all 3 tracts. We're looking at parcel 1, parcel 2, which is the golf course, and parcel 3, which is a portion of the golf course. So if we were to subdivide that into a conventional project, that golf course wouldn't exist.
The 44 acres is where?
All of it.
All of it.
It's the whole thing.
It's the whole
thing. So you're saying that on these 44 acres, the way it's zoned now, you could build how many homes?
Well, if it's 2 to the acre, you'd probably be around 88 units somewhere in that vicinity.
80.
That would be the maximum.
That would be the maximum.
Max 80-some, but you're doing 144. Okay. How many trips would we have in and out of that one? You have 1 entrance, 1 exit, all the same road, right?
That's correct.
One way in and out.
Mm-hmm.
How many people, how many trips do you think it would generate per day?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do is I'm going to let our traffic engineer give you the exact number of trips.
Okay.
Good evening. Guy Di Martino with Traffic Planning Design.
Well, that's what you do, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
I wondered.
To answer your question, in terms of peak hours, we evaluated the morning rush hour peak period, the evening commuter peak period, and then also the Saturday peak period. For all those 3 peak time periods, the site will generate roughly 90 peak hour trips. And a trip is
90 per what?
90 per a 1 hour time period during those peak hours. So in the a.m. Peak period, which typically occurs between 8 a.m. and 9 a.m., there'll be approximately 90 trips entering and exiting the site.
How many per day?
It would be roughly 1,100 trips.
Per day?
Yes, over a 24-hour period.
Oh, okay, okay. Well, you got number. That's good. Okay.
And just for clarification, a trip, I know we talk about going to a grocery store. We think of a trip as back and forth in traffic engineering lingo. One entering vehicle is equal to a trip, and
right.
One exiting is equal to a
trip. I understand.
Trip.
So if I understand it, the Homeowners Association, is the owner of this property going to deed that golf course to the Homeowner Association? The Homeowner Association is going to then lease that golf course to the operators, is that correct?
The entire 44-acre parcel will be part of the condominium.
And so when does that get deeded over?
When the condominium's created.
At what point? I mean, when the builder's done?
When the condominium's created, I mean, when it starts.
When is the condominium created in the process, Mr. Foucault?
Well, basically when the first unit's built.
Okay, thank you.
Right, it becomes the condominium.
So the land would be deeded over to the Homeowner Association when the first one's sold?
Well, what it does, it's actually dedicated to the condominium regime, and it becomes part of the condominium. When you buy a unit, you get a percentage interest, mm-hmm. and you get a percentage interest in that land, so it'll be owned by the owners. Obviously, the developer would continue to own the majority of it through their ownership
right.
of the land until all the units
and
were
it would
sold.
Be so, okay.
And then again, it's envisioned that there'd be a long-term lease of the golf course to the golf course operator.
Mm-hmm. At some point.
Well, yeah, at the beginning, really. I couldn't be
actually,
done.
Actually, in the beginning.
Yeah. So people would, that would all be spelled out, and people would understand right. what they're
all
doing.
All right. Okay. So that, what if the operator decides not to operate a golf course anymore? Then they have all that land that they need to maintain. Is that's the case?
And again,
what can they do with it?
It would be a park area. It would be, basically the maintenance would be cutting the grass.
What can they do with it under the law? Under
it would be open space.
Has to be just open space.
Isn't okay. I think that's right. what we want is open space.
So that they would manage it. The homeowner association would manage it. I'm trying to get
it. Yeah, it would be their land. Yeah.
I understand.
Now I would again, the lease could be assigned to somebody else, another operator.
Another golf course.
And as long as
operator.
It would be profitable, mm-hmm. it would continue to operate. That's not to say at some point it isn't and it won't. But
okay.
I would expect
they could
to,
even open up their own golf course, couldn't they?
Well, that is exactly what occurred at Salt Pond.
Mm-hmm.
The homeowners association subsequently did acquire that, and they actually are operating that golf course.
I don't think they wanted to. I think they sort of had to, but, you know. Anyway, okay, all right, fine.
I don't know that.
Well, I do.
Anything else, Ms. Deaver?
That's it.
Mr. Vincent?
No questions.
Mr. Wilson?
Done.
Mr. Cole?
I think I've read it. I'm pretty comfortable right now.
Okay.
May I ask a question?
Mr. Griffin?
Mr. Fuquay, I looked at the proposed 14 conditions, and there was not one that addressed the fact that the golf course area would be open space. Would you be willing to revise those to include what it is your client is proposing?
I suggested that earlier, Mr. Griffin, and I think you would agree with me. With their application, if that's approved as an RPC, that site plan, that's open space. I mean, that's it, because that site plan is what's approved.
Well, I understand.
I didn't put it in there as a separate condition because I was viewing that was a condition because that's the site plan. But certainly, I think it's pretty clear. That's what I'm representing. That's what we're doing. And it clearly can be stated in the conditions that golf course will remain open space regardless.
I think that would be a good idea.
Anything else? Mr. Griffin, can you continue, please?
Does that conclude the presentation?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Is there anyone here from the public who has anything to add or would like to be heard?
It's for or against, correct?
Lady right, first, yes, ma'am?